Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living grid locked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies and bricks swimming in the sea.
So here with Chris Sylvester from Cal Poly Learfield, Cal Poly Radio this season. A new voice and a new face for a lot of people to hear and see around Cal Poly games. And I thought it'd be a good time to get him in. I've been trying to actually get him into the podcast for about a month or two now, but glad that we're finally able to make some time and make it happen, and probably with a little more context. So, Chris, how's it going?
Good, Alan. Thanks so much for having me on, man. Big fan of Fansmanship, no pun intended there. And, happy we could finally link up and I could get on.
Yeah, totally. So, You're kind of a new face around Cal Poly games, a new voice for fans to hear. So I'm kind of interested in you just kind of sharing a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and kind of just kind of give us a quick snapshot of who Chris Sylvester is. Who is this guy?
Well, Chris Sylvester is a play-by-play broadcaster now for Cal Poly. Very happy to be a part of such a great university, such a great athletic program. So many great people that I'm really excited to work with. And obviously, I started a couple of weeks ago with the first game on the road in Reno at Nevada. But the home game against San Diego was obviously a great atmosphere. And the athletic department, media wise, is really heading in a special direction. There's a lot of cool things going on with Cal Poly, but as far as myself is concerned, I am from Southern California, born and raised in the Long Beach, LA County area. I went to high school at St. John Bosco down here, one of the better football programs in all of high school football in the country. And that's where I got my start broadcasting as a junior in high school. I started calling games for them. My senior year, they won the state and mythical high school national championship. They went 16-0 and beat De La Salle. In the state championship game down in Carson at the StubHub Center. So that was a real big moment for my broadcast career, being so young, being in high school, 17 years old, calling a high school, quote-unquote, national championship game. And since then, I've had gigs with the LA Angels radio station down here, AM 830. I've worked a little bit with the LA Kings radio station, had a show on there Sunday nights from 9 to 10 p.m. called the LA Sports Report a few months back before I kind of shifted all my focus to the Central Coast and to Cal Poly. Also called my fair share of junior college football games for Mount Stack down here at Walnut, one of the better junior college football programs in the state and in the country as well. And Big West-wise, I've done a few basketball games here and there. The only other Cal Poly sporting event I had done was a Long Beach State Cal Poly game from a couple of years ago, but obviously I was able to use that as kind of my way in, I guess, my foot in the door with Cal Poly. And I got hired back in March. And so I've been really excited. The wait's finally over, season's finally underway, and it's just beginning. So that's basically me. Nothing too special at the moment.
Yeah.
Obviously, still a long way to go in my career. And Cal Poly is a great stepping stone.
Hey, in terms of St. John Bosco, I wanted to go back to that. I don't feel like that was that long ago. How old are you, man?
I am only 20 years old, actually. So
okay.
St. John Bosco wasn't that long ago.
Are they in like the same league as like Long Beach Poly and some of those other places like that?
They're in the same section. They're in the southern section with Long Beach Poly, so that they. Only time they'll match up unless they schedule something in the non-league portion of the schedule is the playoffs. And they've actually met up twice in the last handful of years, and they've split both of those. Actually, both have been in the semifinals of the CIS Southern Section. And if you don't know about the CIS Southern Section...
Yeah, all the high schools here are Southern Section right now, although a couple of them are trying to get back over to the Central. So San Luis Obispo is like the northernmost part of the Southern Section.
As a lot of the better schools up there know, Southern Section is really where it's at. I mean, Southern California high school football has and I guess Central Coast high school football. I mean, just the Southern section in whole has really taken a big step forward over the past, I don't know, 10, 15 years. I mean, there's been comparisons to, you know, it might be just as legit as Texas high school football or Florida high school football or Ohio high school football. I mean, the list goes on. So it was great being a part of something like St. John Bosco for 4 years. I still actually produce the broadcast for Bosco on Friday night, whether I'm, you know, traveling with the team or back here in Southern California. I'm still in charge of the broadcast. I mean, I guess technically I have the broadcast rights for St. John Bosco, which is something really cool that I was able to lock down as a student in high school. And, you know, I mean, I really got going at the right time because, I mean, they were a doormat in their league, which features Modern Day, Orange Lutheran, Stirvite High School, Santa Margarita, where RJ Maslowski from the football team is for Cal Poly from. So Jake Sarah's in there as well. So that's regarded as not only the hands down the most competitive league in the state, but perhaps the most competitive league of schools in the country.
Is that Loyola's league too?
Say that one more time.
Is Loyola in that league too?
Loyola used to be in the Sarah League with Bosco for a number of years.
Right.
They matched up against each other, but Loyola's now in I'd say the second toughest league, which is the Mission League of Bishop Mountain area, Cardenas, Sarah, Alamany, Chaminade. So there's a lot of tough schools. Oaks Christian, I think, is in there as well.
Got it.
I mean, Bosco wasn't all that long ago. I, you know, stopped calling games for them this year. It's the first year I haven't done it since 2011. So I definitely missed it, but obviously it was a time for a step up in my career, and I'm very happy to be where I'm at with Cal Poly right now. But, you know, I couldn't have done it without, you know, the St. John Bosco high school name on the resume.
Got it. Yeah, you're with the young buck, Chris Sylvester here. And so in terms of kind of differences or whatever, what in your mind, kind of the first, you're 2 weeks into calling, Division I college games. For you, what's been the biggest adjustment or the biggest difference in terms of getting out there and calling games at this level?
You know, there are definitely the rule changes from high school to Division I college football. In high school football, if you catch it in the end zone, it's a touchback, and you start at the 20 instead of the 25. Obviously, 15-minute quarters in college compared to the 12 that you have at the high school level, a lot more timeouts for, you know, being on the radio, a lot more time to send it to break every now and then. But having done junior college football over the past 2-3 years, I'm very familiar with, you know, the rules in college, not something I ever get mixed up with. I'd say the biggest adjustment, probably being higher up in the press box. A lot of high schools, you're a lot closer to the field, so it's a lot easier to see some of the numbers. So binoculars are definitely a necessity, and, you know, getting used to Cal Poly's triple option offense. I mean, I don't know if folks heard, but first game of the year when Dano had his first touchdown run in the fourth quarter, I was completely fooled. And I was only fooled twice that opening game. I don't think I got fooled by the triple option on Saturday against San Diego, but he faked a handoff to Prothro, who was tackled by about 4 or 5 Nevada defenders inside the 5-yard line, and then Dano, out of the corner of my eye, saw him jumping up and celebrating in the end zone, and was a little embarrassed after that, but I made some light of it. You know, he fooled the Nevada defense, and he fooled me as well. So I say that's been the biggest adjustment, is definitely being, you know, higher up in a press box, and, you know, having to really pay attention to where the ball is going in Tim Walsh's triple option offense.
Yeah. What do you think of that offense so far? I mean, obviously a lot of high school teams run different kinds of option, although, in, you know, depending on where you are, and the school you're at, probably throwing a lot more than Cal Poly is. What are your impressions after just a couple of games on the offense and kind of aesthetically and production wise, how they're doing?
You know, to be completely honest with you, I was a little, I don't want to say I was disappointed, because, I mean, it's a blessing in itself to have the opportunity to call games for Cal Poly. But when I heard it was a triple option offense, I've only called, I think, 2, maybe 3 games where I've, you know, called a game for someone a team that had the triple option. And so I found it, you know, kind of boring at the high school level because, you know, high schools didn't know how to operate it as well. But the way that Daniel Graves and the offense has been able to move the football effectively in the first two games this year, it's been really fun to watch. And I dare I say, I am actually more happy that it's a triple option offense compared to a spread no huddle offense, which is what I've been accustomed to calling Bosco games the last handful of years. So I was a little disappointed at first that, you know, they weren't going to be slinging around the football a lot, but now it's even more exciting when you see Daniel Graves drop back to throw the football. And, you know, I mean, Cal Poly's got some really, really talented backs. I mean, Corey Garcia, who hasn't made a whole lot of noise, did have a touchdown catch on Saturday. Phil Prothro is one of the best fullbacks in all of college football, FCS and FBS. DJ Peluso is a veteran that you like to have in the backfield. The offensive line for the Mustangs, they've done a fantastic job through the first 2 weeks. And then Daniel Graves, too, man. I mean, Daniel was... he was high school football when he was up at Folsom. I mean, he set the state record at the time with 85 touchdown passes. I don't know if that's still the current record in California, but I can't imagine that anybody's gone too much further than that mark of 85. And obviously, I know Cal Poly fans have been waiting for a very long time to see Graves under center with that offense after he waited behind Chris Brown for the last 3 years. So I've loved the triple option offense personally. You know, Nevada had a lot of trouble with it in week one, especially in that second half. San Diego couldn't stop it in the second half, and a huge test on Saturday against the top 10 team at the FCS level on the road against South Dakota State. It'll be interesting to see how effectively Cal Poly can move the football on the ground against the Jackrabbits of South Dakota State.
The Jacks, yeah. I was actually up there 2 years ago when I think their running back's name was Zach Zahner, and Cal Poly had a baseball player named Zach Zahner, and so it was kind of a random thing at the time, but Zenner maybe is how it was pronounced, but that guy was a beast, and Poly had a tough time stopping him and got down early at their old stadium. They've torn that old stadium down and built a new one in its place. I was posting some pictures of it. It looks amazing. There's a huge field house on the backside of it. I mean, you know, you can say it's FCS level, but man, the facility, that the new field house that they had built and the plans for that new stadium, you know, like I said, I'm a little bit jealous, and maybe people wouldn't think this, but I'm jealous that you get to go to Brookings, you know, this weekend, and stay, I'm sure, down in Sioux Falls probably,
it
sounds pretty great.
Sioux Falls is about an hour away from Brookings. It's the new stadium, I believe, is called the Dana J. Dykehouse Stadium, and they had opened up this past weekend against a Pioneer Football League team, you know, which San Diego is, Drake, and they beat them pretty handedly, you know, and they put up 41 points on TCU on the road the week before, and that game was actually tied at halftime. Yeah. So they're really talented. They're a great team. Obviously, the Missouri Valley Conference is arguably the best conference at the FCS level. You know, North Dakota State coming out of that conference, they've won the last 5. FCS football championship. So I'm looking forward to it. I believe the capacity is 19,000 or right around there. And there's supposed to be a Luke Bryant concert, the country singer, after the game. So I'm expecting that thing to be all the way filled up this week. And it's going to be a very, very tough road environment and very well could be the toughest road game of the year for Cal Poly.
Yeah, Chris, I know you're commuting up here right now, but like in terms of just Cal Poly in general, what was something that was kind of unexpected either about Cal Poly or about San Luis Obispo in terms of your interactions up here so far in kind of the short beginning of the career that it's been so far?
I love San Luis Obispo. I mean, eventually I would definitely like relocate. Right now there's just a few things that are obviously family that's holding me back down here. Obviously, I mean, it's not too strenuous to make the drive. I make it once every 2 weeks for the coaches show, you know, home game every other weekend for the most part. So, you know, it's a lot of mileage on the car, but I mean, it's not too bad of a drive. You know, it's a beautiful drive, especially if you take the 101 all the way up. And, you know, I mean, being right next to the ocean the entire time, it's nice. And once you get past the LA Ventura area, you don't really hit a whole lot of traffic. So I love the city, obviously. Love the campus. I have a lot of, you know, being so young, I have a lot of kids that I grew up with down here that are now students there. So it's kind of cool reconnecting with them.
And so, I mean, it's great. It's California still, and I love this state. Don't plan on leaving anytime soon. And so far, it's been awesome.
Nice. Hey, so I was looking it up, and it looks like Bosco played Long Beach Poly in 2014 in the semis. That would have been what, Kitu Humphrey's senior year, yeah? For Long
Beach
Poly?
Kitu, I was really excited to see that Kitu was on the depth chart at the starting safety spot at the end of fall camp, because at the beginning of fall camp, there had been an initial depth chart where he wasn't starting at the safety spot. And I think it was a very smart decision by the coaching staff to redshirt him last year, give him a year to get in shape for, Division I football. And Kitu Humphrey was a very, very impressive defender at Long Beach Poly. I was frankly surprised when I saw that Tim Walsh was able to scoop him up. I mean, he was one of the better safeties in all of Southern California high school football that year. So I was, super impressed and excited to see his name on the roster when I got the job. And, I mean, he's done a hell of a job this far. I believe he is in the top two or three defensively right now as far as tackles are concerned. And he has a couple of tackles lost as well. I'm waiting on him to get his first interception, but that'll come in due time.
Waiting on Cal Poly to get their first turnover in general, right?
Exactly. And so, if Cal Poly wants to win this weekend, I'd imagine they'd have to force a couple.
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of goes into the next thing I wanted to talk about. And while there's not as much context for you, the last few years, Cal Poly's defense has been kind of a keep the ball in front of you, force a third and four, hopefully, and get a stop. And they've been opportunistic at times. The turnovers they have gotten, while there haven't been a ton of them, have been in important situations, like, first and goal, and they'll get a random turnover in a situation like that or something. But I've really been impressed, at least so far, watching the first couple of games, with a little bit of pressure that they've been putting on quarterbacks. They definitely haven't been a blitzing team the past couple of years for whatever reason. And maybe it's that they have the coverage guys now in Rosales and a couple of the other guys out there, Kitu and BJ Nard being the safeties in the middle. Is it Jordan Williams who's starting on the other corner?
Kevin Griffin.
Jordan Williams was a former number three, I think. So I was picturing number three, though. That's Griffin's number, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and Rosales on the other side. And so maybe they just feel like they have the size and athleticism on the corner position now, but it's something that's going to be really important going forward, because teams like Montana and others definitely aren't going to sit back and just run the ball the whole time. There's going to be some passing in the Big Sky, and Cal Poly's got to be able to stop that one way or another. This is a program that has a long tradition of guys who get in the teens and 20s in terms of sacks. And as a team, Cal Poly hasn't been there, the last few years. They had three straight Buck Buchanan Award winners, maybe 10 years ago. And they just kind of haven't had those big defensive numbers. Payam Sadat is definitely a big reason for that, I think, in terms of this season. What have you seen from, the defense in terms of pressure they've been putting on? I know that was one of the first things you said.
Well, like you said, I mean, over the last couple of years, statistically, the Mustangs have ranked towards the bottom of the Big Sky Conference defensively. But coming into the season healthy, especially in the secondary, this is the first time in Tim Walsh's 8 years at Cal Poly where he's had 2 6-foot corners.
Right.
And, I mean, outside of a first quarter in Nevada against a veteran offense, I think Nevada returned 9 of 11 starters, maybe even 10 of 11 on offense this year, although they didn't look all that good against Notre Dame this past Saturday. But then again, it's Notre Dame coming off of a loss in South Bend, and never easy to play there, especially when you're a mid-major Mountain West team like Nevada is. But outside of that first quarter where they gave up 21 points on the road at Nevada in week one, I mean, that secondary has been as impressive as any, really, at the FCS level. I mean, Cal Poly has, small sample size, but Cal Poly, defensively, they haven't allowed a point in the second half of each of the first two games. And that was very
critical, leading to that comeback, taking the game to overtime in Nevada and putting San Diego away pretty early on into that third quarter this past Saturday at Alex G. Spano Stadium. So that's a defensive unit that the coaching staff was very, very excited about heading into the year. The only question mark there was the defensive front. Patterson dealt with a couple injuries the first few games of the year. Marcus Paige Allen isn't going to play until the conference opener.
Right,
against
suspended the first
Montana.
Three games, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, obviously getting him back will be a plus. If Patterson can get healthy, that'll be a plus as well. Kelly Shepard up front's been fairly solid. He's a local product, I believe. I believe he's from Arroyo Grande High School. But that linebacking core is as good as any in the conference. You know, obviously, big shot in the arm getting Josh Latulia-Yastanoa back after sitting out last year.
Wait, I'm going to stop you. How many times did you have to practice saying Latulia-Yastanoa before you felt
really
confident?
They drilled me about it, especially Eric Burdick, SIG, who's my color commentator on the majority of the road games this year. I think he got me on air week one because it looks like Latulia-Yastanoa, but the G
right.
is supposed to sound like a Y, so you say Latulia-Yastanoa.
Uh-huh.
And so it took me a while, and you know, I'm a little happy that Zaka Tuitelli left, because that's a little bit of a mouthful to say as well. You know, Justin Wood, the new offensive coordinator, that's a little bit easier to say. Although Justin Silva's first name, J-U-S-T-O-N, which is a little interesting. I don't think I've ever seen a Justin spelt like that. But, no, it took me a while to get Latulia-Yastanoa down. Actually, Gigantino, when you look at it, it could be like Gigantino, you know what I mean? It could look like a tougher last.
Right.
But I think I got that one down during the spring game. But back to the defense. At the linebacking core, Chris Santini had a big game on Saturday. He's a transfer from Boise State, was on the All Big Sky special teams team at the end of last season. And then, like you talked about, the secondary, B.J. Nard at safety, Keetu Humphrey as well, and then the 2 6-foot corners, first time at Walsh, at Rosales, and Kevin Griffin, who began in the Pac-12 at Washington State. So, man, if they can stay healthy, they can be one of the better defenses in the Big Sky, and you know that is a tough schedule this year. Beginning this week on the road against South Dakota State, a team that can, you know, really light up the scoreboard. Montana's going to be a top 10 team after knocking off Northern Iowa this past weekend. Eastern Washington, you know, beat Washington State on the road, took North Dakota State to overtime without Cooper Kupp, the best wide receiver in the FCS, who got hurt later in that game. And so you know, it's not going to be easy. That followed, you know, you have a North Dakota team that's going to be tough on the road as well. UC Davis has looked pretty good so far. So, I mean, it's going to be really, really tough. Cal Poly looking to get back to the postseason for the first time since they won the conference in their first year back in 2012. But defense is going to be the make-or-break unit for this team.
For sure, here with Chris Sylvester. Hey, so I asked you the question about Keetu because last year Cal Poly played at Arizona State. They were right in the game in the fourth quarter. Arizona State pulled away, and I was flying home the next day, and Keetu happened to be sitting next to me on the airplane, so I got a chance to chat with him for a little bit about, you know, what he was doing, and you know, he got himself out to that game and back, and was you know, was real, you know, a really good guy, it seemed like, to talk to, and you know, super nice kid. Question for you, Chris Sylvester, when you're not calling football games, what are you or dealing with high school or college football? What do you like to do? What are some hobbies? What are some things you enjoy?
I just like spending time with family. You know, I mean, I you know, as much as it seems as if it's only like a 1 day a week job, I want to make sure I'm always prepared as much as I can be. So, I mean, obviously the last couple of nights I've been operating on the laptop until late at night, getting all my research done for South Dakota State. I, you know, like I said, I'm the executive producer. I have the broadcast rights for St. John Bosco High School. So I do a lot of, I handle a lot of meetings during the week with that. You know, I go after companies to, sponsor the broadcast. So I'm visiting, you know, sometimes I go door to door in the city of Bellflower to business to see if they want to advertise on the St. John Bosville Football Radio Network. And, you know, it doesn't sound like I'm all that busy of a guy, but I find a way to be pretty tired towards the end of every day and feel like I earned a good night's sleep.
You mentioned you had a kid. Joe Prothrow just had his second one, and the night before the Saturday game. Try to kind of like picture, and I can't, because I have two kids, and I feel like I'm gonna, you know, pass out all day every day, it seems like, depending on how the last night was. I'm trying to picture a guy who has a newborn contending for, you know, All-American status at Cal Poly. You know, if Joe Prothrow has the kind of a year that a lot of people expect out of him this year, you know, I think that's going to be something, you know, kind of a feat or an achievement that's kind of underrated, no matter how you slice it. If somebody, you know, if you can be a, I don't know how old Joe is, maybe 22, you know, a 22-year-old in college who's got two kids,
yeah,
and who's, yeah, you know, who's getting good enough grades to play football at Cal Poly, and maintaining all that at the same time, you know, I think that's maybe something to behold.
No, absolutely, man. Hats off to Joe Prothrow. I was a little surprised after the game hearing that him and his wife were welcoming their second kid. And that was a little bit of a shocker to me. But, you know, I mean, you don't hear that a whole lot of, you know, college players. But, I mean, it'll happen from time to time. I mean, I'm a young parent, young husband as well. So I can definitely relate on a lot of levels with Joe Prothrow, but I definitely agree with you, man. It's, you know, going to practice every day and, you know, making sure that your grades are up to par in the classroom at a very, very recognized and very strong academic school like Cal Poly is. I mean, it's extremely tough. And so, I mean, what he's doing, you know, is remarkable considering the situation, but I think at the same time, it could also be used as some motivation to, you know, make a living playing football, you know, because he's definitely a guy that has the size, that has the speed, has the athleticism to play at the next level. And he's even a guy that he's a guy that I think could maybe after this season, you know, go to the NFL level. So he's a very special back. Cal Poly is lucky to have him. He's still the all-time rushing leader up in Concord at Clayton Valley Charter High School, one of the better high school football programs in Northern California. So, you know, he's a special talent, and he is the backbone of that offense.
Absolutely. Here with Chris Sylvester, the Cal Poly radio play-by-play dude this year. And Chris, you'll be calling not just football, right? You'll be calling basketball,
yeah,
and baseball as well?
Basketball and baseball as well. Yes.
As long as those things don't conflict with football, right? I mean, I feel like there's usually like one or two conflicting.
Yeah, I'm really bummed because I filled in and I called the Gonzaga Pepperdine game at Pepperdine. And so the basketball team opens at Pepperdine this year. I'm going to be in Weber State for a game the next morning.
Yep.
So I'm not going to get to do that one. And then they play in Arizona at ASU the next day, so I'm,
yep,
probably going to miss that one as well. So I'm a little disappointed, obviously, for me being in my first year calling Division I college sports. It would have been really cool to go to you know, a Pac-12 environment early on, but you know, they do go to Cal later in the year. They do go to University of Washington as well. Have a game in Princeton. Fresno State, and then there's a tournament over Thanksgiving that's just outside of Chicago at Northern Illinois. So,
yeah.
it's a pretty competitive non-conference schedule. And you know what, the Big West Conference for basketball is definitely on the rise. I mean, UC Irvine, with what they've done over the last 2-3 years, obviously Hawaii's not going to really be a factor this year due to some NCAA violations, but Coach Gannat, their first year head coach last year, you know, took them to the NCAA tournament. And then and Long Beach State, you know, I used to cover them down here. I grew up right down the street from the Pyramid. They are very, very special, and they're going to be really special for years to come. I mean, they're going to be, they should be. And, you know, they've had the talent, and they've only gone once under Coach Munson, but they just got a commitment from a four-star guard who had offers from the Pac-12, the Big 12, SEC, you name it.
from down here in Las Angeles, and they're in the final five to land a top 50 recruit in next year's class. So I mean, they're definitely getting it done recruiting wise and transfer wise, and so but you know, Cal Poly, it doesn't matter in the Big West Conference, as you know, Owen. I mean, Cal Poly did it as a team under 500 a few years ago and got into the NCAA tournament. So really, the only thing that matters for the conference is, you know, 3 days in March at the Honda Center in Anaheim.
Yeah, absolutely. And Coach Munson is absolutely one of my favorite ones to watch whenever he comes up to Mott. And the Big West Conference is one I've been meaning, you know, I it's one of those things that I always want to go to games down in Southern California at the Pyramid or the Bren Event Center or other places like that. And just, you know, whatever happens with my schedule, I just never seem to be able to. Maybe this year I'll be able to get down there. What happened with Lamb at Long Beach State? I saw him his freshman year at UCLA, and I thought he was going to be like, you know, just amazing in the Big West. And his last trip to Mott, he didn't start, and he played, I think, maybe single digit minutes. That was one that I was always scratching my head about. Maybe you have some insight being Long Beach native.
Well, I know all about that. It was a really messy situation. Actually, they were lined up to have the most athletic and talented starting five the Big West has seen since the UNLV days. They had Mike Caffey, who was an excellent point guard, all-conference point guard. They had Keala King, transfer from Arizona State, Tony Freeland, transfer from DePaul, Dan Jennings, transfer from West Virginia, and Lamb, of course, from UCLA. And that was going to be their starting five. And, you know, you have four Power Six conference transfers, and you have a point guard like Mike Caffey. That would have been quite the team. But, you know, Keala King and Tony Freeland, they got kicked off the offseason before Lamb became eligible, mid-season transfer from UCLA. And Lamb, Lamb had a breakout first. Long Beach State beat USC at home. They got a home-and-home with SC, right, and they beat them at the Pyramid in Lamb's first game. And Lamb went off, but I think he led all scorers with 20-plus points. But after that game, I mean, he had a few good games in conference, had a few good games in his senior year. He had dealt with knee injuries throughout his college career. His final year at UCLA, which kind of, you know, forced him to transfer, he had to, I believe he tore his meniscus and had an ACL issue. So, I mean, he was always injured. Having gone to a few of the practices, having talked to some of the coaches down there, they were really disappointed by how that all turned out. I mean, he was one of the top recruits coming out of Modern Day High School down here in Santa Ana, Orange County. But he just, you know, lack of motivation. I mean, sometimes when you go from a Power Six conference school, especially a Pac-12 school with the history that UCLA has, down to a mid-major school like Long Beach State, you might, you know, not try as hard. You might think that you're going to walk in and be the man right away. But a lot of people underestimate how talented the Big West has gotten to be in basketball, especially over the past 3-4 years. And So that was really something that was kind of ruined from the start, because yeah, I think the main reason he transferred over here was to play with Keala King and Tony Freeland, guys that have, you know, he grew up around at the high school level. I mean, he went to Modern Day with Keala King, but they, you know, they both of those got kicked off.
Right.
Kicked off the team in the offseason, and you know, things never really came together.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, basketball is a ways away, and I'll be talking about Cal Poly a lot. But one name that might be kind of a sleeper if he can stay healthy in the Big West is JT Adenrile on UC Davis.
Yeah.
That guy. I don't know what his athleticism looks like nowadays, or what, you know, he hasn't played in a couple of years, I don't think. But there was a play. You know, you every now and then you see a play and you go like, oh my God, did everybody else just see that? It was a blowout.
Yeah.
It was a blowout game. Cal Poly was beating Davis maybe 3 years ago up here, or down here, I guess, as it were, from Davis. And Adenrile took a rebound, you know, made a fake and went dribbled one way and dunked over about three Mustangs. And Cal Poly was already up by like maybe 18 or something like that. And so, you know, people were kind of distracted. And I've never seen the replay of it or you know, in any kind of a, you know, any kind of a highlight thing or, you know, or anything. But man, sometimes those things just kind of stick out, you know, stick out in your head. And that was definitely, you know, one of those times. So there'll be plenty of basketball to talk in, you know, November, December, Chris, and hopefully we'll be able to get back together then at some point. But in the meantime, I'm going to encourage you to drive safe as you come up and back here, and have a great time in Brookings. Hey, there's a hamburger joint in Brookings. It's kind of across the street and down the street just a little bit of ways, but I think on the same block as like the downtown South Dakota State store. And I don't know if you're traveling with the team on the bus, et cetera, but if you happen to have a chance to go there, I went there a couple of years ago with the Tribune writer at the time, JD Scroggin, and it's one of these places where they're cooking the burgers on a island in the middle, and you're kind of posted up on bar stools all around it, and they're making these sliders and shakes that are just it's pretty much taking you back to this, you know, the 50s and 60s maybe in the U.S. in terms of a diner. So if you can find the place and get there, there's a ton of South Dakota State fans in there before the game. Obviously, I don't know what time is the game at. Is it like a 2 o'clock game?
It's a 6 o'clock local kick.
Oh, so, yeah.
Four back west, but no, I'll definitely
make it happen and get up early. I'm sure you guys are staying. I think they stayed in Sioux Falls last time, the team. But if you can get up there a little early and get a burger in you, it's definitely worth the trip, and have a great time.
Absolutely.
You know, travel safe, have a good call, and
thank you.
And like I said, we'll chat again sometime as basketball season approaches.
Thanks so much, Don. I really, really had fun being on, and look forward to joining you again soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Chris.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Streetlights so bright they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Signs out on